Birdwatching at the Lurie's is the official podcast of this year's event in partnership with VML and Biz Community. Episode 2, the emotion episode with special guests Neo Sekgola, Head of Creative at Le Pub, part of the Publicis Group, Charlene James, Chair of the ACA and Marketing Practice Lead at Accenture Song, Tebogo Skwambane, WPP Country Manager, Terry McKenna, Executive Creative Director of The Odd Number, and rounding it off, Carl Willoughby, Chief Creative Officer of TBWA Hunt the Scars. Neo Sekgola is Head of Creative for Le Pub, part of the Publicis Group. She's been a creative force for over two decades, creating powerful campaigns that connect emotionally and earn their way into culture. Her love for ideas and innovative strategic thinking have landed her countless local and global awards, and she's been a juror at the Cannes Lions, DNAD, and this year was jury president for the radio and audio category. Neo is jury chair at this year's Lurie Awards for the student category. We tap into Neo's infinite well of creativity and see and learn how she's able to infuse such strong emotional bonds into her work. Neo, it's an honor meeting you, and I'm really excited to hear your perspective on the health of our industry. I think you've got an interesting vantage point because you've sat on so many international juries. How do you think our creative product is doing as a country at the moment? What can we be better at and what mustn't we lose?
So thank you for having me there. This is great. Look, I think our creative industry is at a very, very healthy point at this stage. I mean, I was fortunate to also be sitting on the student jury here at the Lurie's. And the future really is looking bright. I think the students are just doing amazing work. I mean, I was quite intrigued, actually. I was quite surprised, pleasantly surprised to see the quality of the work that's coming out of our schools. But just having sat on all these juries over the past year, you know, I felt that I think we're definitely not lagging behind, right? But I think there are some areas of improvement in perhaps how we package our work, perhaps how we express it to diverse juries around the world. I think that's where we could be a little bit better in terms of making sure that, you know, our work, especially our more culturally nuanced work from South Africa, lands appropriately to people who may not necessarily understand.
So when you say packaging, our case studies?
It's our case studies, it's our storytelling of those case studies, really, just to make it like land a little bit more succinctly, a little bit more clearly, I think, to people who don't have the context that we would have.
Totally matters, yeah. I get that.
Yeah.
And coming back to the question, what do you think we shouldn't lose as an industry?
I think as an industry, we shouldn't lose our perspective, our very unique South African perspective. I think our storytelling is so rich. That's what really sets us apart, I think, from the rest of the world. I mean, I think any place would have its own kind of cultural context and nuances. And I think ours is really, really rich, really, really strong. We shouldn't really ever lose that in favor of kind of being on par with the world. I think that's, you know, our cultural nuances are what give us the edge.
I think what I've certainly noticed is that emotional connection seems to be your signature. And I looked at some of your work on Behance, and I was quite struck by quite a simple piece for Ingram's that you did a little while ago. And what struck me is your gifts to create this strong emotional connection between a brand and its audience. How do you apply that?
I think, you know, fundamentally, and actually credit must go to Dlamini Ngcobo for that, because, you know, that's his work. He was a writer on that piece, and I mean, I think it's absolutely amazing. I think how, you know, I tend to approach my work is also from a starting point as a consumer myself. You know, what are the kind of stories that really speak to me? What touches my own cords? I think I try not to approach things from a purely business perspective. Obviously, that has to be taken into consideration. But ultimately, we also are consumers. We also are people. And you know, it's important to kind of tap into that aspect of yourself, I think, as a creative, to be able to then tell authentic stories as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just about being human. I like to be human and feel that I, you know, the work that I do, I also enjoy, if you will. Absolutely. I hope that makes sense to you, Dan.
It really does.
I think leading on from that into the next question, it's very clear, too, that you've got a deep love for this country. Is that why radio and audio is so connected to you?
Yes, because storytelling, again, is at our core. I mean, just, you know, it's, storytelling is as, you know, as old as time, right? And absolutely. And I think radio and audio is a particularly difficult medium because obviously you're telling stories without, you know, the aid of, you know, the visual aids and all of these things that TV and other kind of media allow you to do. So to really crack amazing, amazing audio storytelling is, I think, it shows your mettle, I think, as a writer.
It really
absolutely
does.
Absolutely. And I think it's the best medium, really.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Then going back in time, what are the formative things that have shaped your appetite to actually get into this industry?
So, you know, this is over 20 years ago, right? But I'll tell you something that's never kind of left me, and I look at it very fondly, and also it was a kind of a mark of the time. So my very first job was at Hunt-Lascaris, TBWA Hunt-Lascaris, and Tony Granger was the ECD at the time. And
I remember amongst giants there.
You're right. And I remember just before I started working, and I'd kind of come in to have a chat, and I think to sign some papers. And I was in awe of him. I was just in complete awe of this man. And I remember saying to him, because I had no idea what to say to him, right? But I remember saying to him, well, I'm really, really excited to come and work here, and I can't wait to learn. And he said to me, you're not here to fucking learn. You're here to fucking work. And that has never left me. And indeed, from that very first day, I was just here to fucking work. But it was really about kind of just diving into it and really learning the machinations, not just beyond the you know, the actual kind of intricacies of the job, but how to tap into that aspect of the job that allows you to actually, you know, create, allows you to immerse yourself in you know, I suppose a brief, but in a human way. Like, I mean, as I said to you before, it's such an interesting, I think, nuance. You know, we're not accountants. We are, you know, commercial storytellers. Thank God we're not accountants. So there is a very distinct thing that one must kind of open oneself up to in order to be able to create over and over again on demand, but in a way that's meaningful and actually speaks to people.
Fantastic.
You know, yeah. So it's just about being human, Ben. It's about, you know, we love this thing, but how do we keep at it and do it authentically and beautifully every single time? And I think that's what I want to keep learning, want to keep exploring and keep growing at and being better at. Yeah.
Fantastic. So bringing it back to the future of our industry, and you know, given the fact that you're chair of the student category, what were the dominant themes that popped out for you?
Wow. But the work was so varied, And interestingly, this is not something that popped up numerous times, but it certainly was. I think there was one piece that was kind of fully immersed in AI. And globally, I mean, the industry, I mean, we are in Gen AI, right? We are living in the age where those technologies getting better and better and better, and, you know, how we harness it from as creatives is only going to get better and better and better and grow with time. But I think what was intriguing was that there was not much AI in the student work. What there was, at least not that I could tell, but so I was intrigued to see actual origination, actual storytelling, actual craft, just the kind of the old school way of doing things. You know, that was very interesting because I did fully expect, you know, a lot of all this, like, you know, tricksy, weird, wonderful stuff.
Magpie syndrome.
Absolutely, right? I think that what popped up is that there wasn't a lot of that, and you know, I was quite intrigued to see that, and quite happy actually, because we're still leaning into that craft. Ultimately, what this industry is, you know, based on, if you will.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Given, imagine for a second, the students sitting in front of you that entered work, what advice would you give them going forward?
Oh my God, keep at it, keep working hard. I mean, the work that really shone and kind of rose above the rest of the work was, you know, where craft was there, where thinking was there, where the idea was the core of the execution. I think a lot of times one tends to see, you know, purely executional work, if that makes sense, as in, you know, people kind of rush to execution, people rush to the pretty things without really developing the thinking, developing the idea, you know, at the core. And the work that really just stood out was work that was predicated on a very, very solid idea, a very, very solid insight. And then ultimately, the storytelling essentially like kind of crafts itself ultimately because your idea is solid. So my advice is to really spend more time on the thinking, spend more time on the concept, if you will, and then the execution thereof will then start to build around that very strong core. It's almost like the foundation of a house. You know, if the foundation is right, the building will be impeccable. Ultimately, will be strong.
I love that. Something that I've noticed is you're not one of the people that visits culture. You're embedded in it. How do you do that? What are the habits that you have to remain grounded in culture with your work?
I read a lot. Mm. I think culture, I suppose reading is possibly the fastest access to culture, especially varied culture. You know, you have to be broad. You have to understand a lot of things. You have to kind of build your equity, your internal mental equity in order to ultimately be able to tell stories that are broadly appealing, right? So I read a lot. I like to watch people a lot too. And I go out a lot. The best place also to just experience people, you know, kind of people without the boundaries around them. It's kind of like a bar, for instance, you know, bar hopping and watching people in bars and talking to people in bars.
There's plenty of that this week.
There is plenty of that this week, yeah. But it's almost like people are just completely unfettered in that environment. And it's one tends to meet just a myriad, you know, just diverse types of people. And one gets to talk to them without, you know, kind of the, you know, it being official, if you will.
Yes.
But anyway, ultimately, I tend to ramble, but yes, I think reading is critical. It exposes you to so much more than you typically be able to access personally, as you know, as yourself. And then ultimately, yeah, watch people, talk to people, step outside of your comfort zone, speak to diverse people, have a mixed group of friends that allows you to just tap into different spaces, because it's quite lonely just knowing what you know within yourself. Branch out, broaden your horizons, access different things.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Tapping into reading, I saw in your bio that you're, I don't know, I actually know how you do this. You're studying law.
Yes.
Currently. And you're also working on a children's book series.
Series, yes.
What do you feel your legacy will be for the South African creative industry with all of the stuff that you're doing?
I think my legacy, to be quite honest, it's not even all the little things that I'm doing. I think these little things, I'm studying law very slowly. My God, I'm probably the longest, you know, very, very slowly. But I think my legacy is to show Black girls that it's possible. I think, I think our industry is very, a little bit homogenous, right? It's very white, it's very male. And a lot of my peers that I grew up with in the industry have kind of like fallen off, especially women. There are not a lot of us in this industry. So my legacy, I hope, would be that Black girls can see that you can actually make a career out of this. And there is space for us to flourish and to thrive and to do really, really well. So that's really what I want. You know, it's not the books, it's not the best of that. It's just to be, you know,
brilliant words.
Yeah, that should be that. Yeah.
I really, really, truly hope that they materialize.
Yeah.
And all the best for this week.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Ben.
Such a pleasure.
Thank you for inviting me. This is great.
Such a pleasure.
Amazing.
Thank you. Charlene James is chair of the ACA, a board member of the Lurys, and marketing practice lead at Accenture Song. We chat to her about the bridge between industry bodies such as the ACA and the wider agency market, as well as her progress at Accenture Song. How's it, Charlene? How are you?
Oh, I'm good, Ben. How are you?
Lekker.
Yeah, it's lovely to be here at Lurys. very busy here today. So
it is, hey?
Yeah, it's noisy.
It's a great vibe and a great buzz.
Yeah. Always good to be at Lewis.
Welcome to the Beehive. So firstly, well done on running, firstly, a formidable business, and then having a hand in steering our industry. I mean, that's quite an accomplishment, especially via the ACA and the Lurie's board. So in terms of your role as ACA chairperson, how is the ACA playing its part in upweighting its role in our country's creative product rather than industry business issues and governance?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Ben. The ACA for the longest time has been involved in regulatory and governance. Mm. And over the past 2 years, we've kind of shifted the focus to the creative product.
Mm.
And some of the things we're doing is that we brought Pritesh, who is CEO of the Lurie's, onto our board.
Makes sense.
We're working very closely with the creative circle on various initiatives, one of which is kind of educating clients around the importance of creativity and how creativity impacts their business results. So that's what we're doing. We formed a creative and effectiveness tribe. It's run by Luca from TBWA. But there's some phenomenal minds that sit on that tribe. And it's really to drive the narrative around creativity and effectiveness. How do you get closer to clients? How do you get clients to buy good work? So there's quite a lot of initiatives that are coming out of that tribe and what they're doing. And so, yeah, I think we've realized that the importance of a creative product, like you say, is what our industry is all about. Yeah. And so working closely with the other industry bodies, we're working with MASA, trying to get the marketers to buy good work, to get back into the kind of mind space of creativity drives effectiveness. So those are some of the things that we're doing.
Fantastic. I guess in a way, it's convincing corporate South Africa to invest in creativity.
Absolutely.
Because there's a return there.
There's a completely. Yeah, I mean, there's a direct correlation between creativity and business results.
Mm.
And it's been proven. It's been proven by McKinsey, by so many other kind of consultants that have kind of done the homework around and the metrics around how creativity drives business results.
Fantastic. So Accenture Song.
Yeah.
What is the song part about? And beyond the intriguing name, how's it going?
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. It's an awesome company. I think the song thing, well, there's so many narratives around it, but I suppose that's the creative part, right?
Sure.
Bringing creativity and then consultancy and technology together. I think it's a phenomenal company that's a little bit ahead of the curve.
Fantastic.
In terms of technology and bringing creativity in. Mm. I think Accenture really understand the power of creativity underpinned by technology. Do you know what I mean? And they're going to do phenomenal things in the future. I think where it's a little bit gray is, do clients really understand what they do, you know, and how they bring technology, consultancy, or strategy and consultancy and then creativity together? But they're doing it, and they're doing it well.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So pulling it back to the Lurie's, where we are now, are there any standout pieces that you're shouting for from Accenture?
Yeah. There are quite a few, actually.
Excellent.
I think there's four great pieces. There's Alan Gray, which I want to come back to.
Yeah.
Then there's two pieces from the retail category, which is the macro, are you in a macro mood ad?
Yes.
And then there's due day for builders. And I think both those pieces are breakthrough for retail, you know. I'm hoping they're going to do well.
Good.
You know, the work's really strong this year, and particularly in film. So it'll be tough. But those two pieces really stand out for the retail category. And then there's Westgrow, which I think will do well tonight. But
is that in B2B category?
No, yeah, no, not B2B. I think digital. I think they'll do well in digital.
Right.
But
tell me about Alan Gray.
Alan Gray, yes. I think that's a beautiful piece of work.
Mm.
You know that the old King James, now Accenture Song, has had Alan Gray for, what, 20 years?
Easily
20 years. And it's very difficult to keep telling the value of time story. I think they've done it beautifully in this last piece of work. You know.
Who is the director?
Can't remember.
we'll dig into that.
Yeah, but I didn't actually work on it. But the CD was, or ECD was Graham Jenner.
I can't
remember. And kind of him and I have had lots of conversation around this piece of work. I think it was beautifully done and beautifully shot. That's a year ago now. It's just an epic piece of beautiful work, and you can see the story of Alan Gray continues in this ad. So I'm really punching for it. I'm really hoping that it does well. I think the agency deserves to win something on that ad.
Good.
Even if it's like...
Well, I'm holding thumbs for you.
Craft.
So given that you've walked the client service path most of your career, what are the key pieces of advice you'd give to someone in selling in brave and bold work into a client?
You know what? I think client service have lost the ability to sell work. You know? I think the
order takers.
Yeah. I think that what I tell them to do is get out of your spreadsheet and start getting passionate about the work again. I mean, in the old days, we were told, go sell this work or don't come back.
Mm.
And that's where they kind of need to shift. Mm. I think account management people have lost that the passion for creativity, the passion for selling good work. And they kind of stuck in timesheets and operations, like you say. You know?
Is that a lack of confidence or a lack of getting their hands dirty?
I think it's the structure of the agency.
Mm.
I think we've gone into the conversation around margins and profit and, you know, making business sense, time pressure, et cetera. But we're not going to win. This industry is not going to win if account management stays there. They've got to get in more into the strategy conversations, more into the, into selling good work, making good work. You know, facilitating the environment so creatives can come up with good work. And that's what account management or client service is meant to be. So that's the one piece of advice. The other one is to build trust with clients. I think we've lost that ability to build trust and to get clients to believe in us again and to form strong partnerships. And then the last thing I think I definitely tell account management is like, you've got to believe that creativity drives business results. And I think they don't understand that. They don't get it, you know, as much as they should. So those are the three pieces of advice that I
really like those. Thank you for those. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. They make complete sense. Lastly, what excites you more? A bold comstrat or a brilliant or slightly terrifying creative concept?
Look, I think they're linked.
Yeah.
I think you can't get a great creative idea if your strategy is weak. So, isn't it? But definitely, if I had to choose a great creative idea, that's absolutely a great creative idea. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's really been awesome chatting to you.
Thanks.
Good luck for those pieces tonight.
Thank you.
Or tomorrow night, rather.
Yeah.
And lovely to spend the time with you.
Lovely speaking to you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks, Shadi.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks.
Next up, Tebogo Skwambani, WPP Country Manager for South Africa. She graduated in the US, holds a BA from Dartmouth College and an MBA from Harvard Business School. She spent over 20 years as an international strategy consultant, including co-founding her own business that was successfully merged with Monitor South Africa in 2011. She's worked across the public and private sectors, including a broad range of industries. She was the first WPP country manager to be appointed globally and is a World Economic Forum Young Global Leader and a fellow of the Africa Leadership Initiative and the Aspen Institute's Global Leadership Network. Tebogo gives us a unique bird's eye view of how our creative industry is doing. Hello, Tebogo. Good to chat to you today. How are you?
I'm great, Ben. Great to chat to you too. It's an exciting time.
Absolutely. So you've got a unique vantage point of our industry, a helicopter view, if you like. You've got a lot of horses in this race. How are you feeling about the overall health of our creative industry?
Yeah, I'm as you say, a lot of horses in the race, but I'm feeling quite optimistic, quite positive about the overall health. of our creative industry. I do think that despite losing a lot of creative talent to opportunities all over the world, I think we've got really deep expertise and experience and skill, not only in South Africa, but across the region as a whole. So I'm feeling very bullish. I think often that is that sentiment is reinforced for me when I see how our work and how our people do in other parts of the world, like how our work is received, how the work from South Africa and from the rest of Africa is on the radar of some of my global creative colleagues. So I'm feeling very, very confident, very positive.
Fantastic.
At the moment, frankly.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Not dissimilar to our rugby team and players all over the world.
Right, exactly. Hopefully we'll reach those same heights
exactly.
In time as well.
And bring them all back. So the next question I've got is, I mean, where do you see opportunities for our creative industry to grow even further in the same manner, you know, using that sports analogy?
Yeah, a couple of things. I think, firstly, I actually think that what we do really well in on the continent here is actually do a lot with very little. I think that we are exceptionally innovative with what we have. Mm. I think that we've got very different populations that we need to access, and we manage to do so and create experiences, brand experiences, and exposure that actually speaks to a lot of different groups of people, a lot of different demographics. Mm. And I think that our opportunities to grow really lie in harnessing where we have similar problems to solve across the continent, where we can actually bring that creativity to solving some of our more challenging situations across the continent. And in speaking about South Africa specifically, I think that we've done already quite a bit around, you know, how do we get around the way we live our lives? And how do we work with the situations that we are in? Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, there are different markets across the world that actually do learn from us. They look at our work and think, okay, actually that there's something similar we can, you know, we can take from that in Turkey or in India or in, you know, so on. Mm-hmm. I think another thing that we could do, or another opportunity, I think, really, is around technology. I think that we, you know, I say often we've punched way above our weight from a technology perspective in terms of what's possible, in terms of the skills that we have in market. Mm. It's not necessarily what our clients are embracing yet as much as we would like to see, but I do think we actually do have the skills in market from a technology side. We don't need to go abroad to bring in creative technology expertise and the facility with that, as much as we just need to convince our clients and some of our creative colleagues locally to actually harness more of that. So I do think we've got what we need. We just need to make sure everybody's kind of on the same page around going to the next level, you know, reaching our full potential.
Totally get that. Would you say, you know, going back to diversity, is that a superpower of ours?
I think so, absolutely, 100%. As I was saying, you know, we've got a lot of different communities to access. And you know, as you well know, in South Africa, and I think it's the same across many countries in the Middle East Africa region, it's quite nuanced. It can be very different from certain demographic in a certain city or certain province, certain language, you know, etc. So, and we bring that to bear in a lot of our work. I think sometimes we get it wrong, but often we get it right. And I think that is something that the rest of the world can look at and learn from. How do we manage to create experiences of our clients' brands that actually speak to a lot of different you know, elements of our diversity in our country and in our cultures and society?
Fantastic. I really do agree with that. So we're in the Lurie's Week. Do you feel the Lurie's is an accurate benchmark of our country's creative pedigree? Why is that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I must say, because I haven't been in the industry for that long, but I must say when I first came in, I was a little bit interested to understand, just how accurate is it? Just how sort of globally acceptable are our results of Lurie's? And I think that largely I would say yes. I think insofar as the work that is awarded, the work that is recognized. I would say, yes, you see a lot of the same work that's awarded elsewhere in some of the global or some of the award shows outside of this region and right. Cannes as well. But at the same time, the one area I think of opportunity here is there's a lot of work that actually doesn't make it to the Lurys for whatever reason, whether it's certain agencies or certain clients, it's not high on their radar, it's not really what they're after, or the cost of entering, etc. And so there's great work out there that just isn't necessarily submitted and included. And I think that's maybe, I know there's a lot of work with the Lurys being done around, you know, how do we give as many different brands and agencies exposure, but I feel like there's some interesting stuff happening and some smaller agencies that actually could get a lot more profile and their work could get more visibility.
Would you say the Lurys is the proverbial canary in the coal mine? You know, is it a link to a healthy Lurys is a healthy industry?
I would say it is one of the important. I think it's a lot of weight to put onto the Lurys, but I would say it's definitely one of the most important. You know, we need to make sure that the Lurys is healthy. We need to make sure that there is a lot of that. You know, the Lurys is the best it can be. You know, it is rigorous because it is that important. I think to our industry.
Fantastic.
And to our club for our clients. Yeah,
right. And what could we be doing better as an industry?
Yeah. So, I think if I speak about Lurys first, I think that there seems to be quite a bit of diversity every year in the judges, in the jury presidents. I think we could do a little bit better. I mean, I think we see judges coming from across Africa, across the Middle East as well. I think we could have a greater percentage of judges from elsewhere. I know we're working hard to ensure that we're getting more work submitted from all over the region. I think we should do the same with the judging community and the jury presidents as well, although I'm loving what I'm seeing so far this year and waiting to be exposed to more. So I think that for me is important. I think what we could be doing better within our industry is also similar. I'd love to see a lot more cross-pollination of creatives coming from other markets, working certainly within our industries. We have quite a few, but I'd love to see more. I'd love to see more South African creatives going elsewhere and across the continent, learning, understanding kind of what that world is like, you know, what it takes to be successful there. I think it can only make the work that we do in South Africa richer. And then we can kind of cross-pollinate. And it's not a case of, you know, one teaching the other. It's a two-way learning, I think. And that exposure, I think, could really deepen
for that
and
sense
strengthen
of collaboration.
A lot of our skills and capabilities. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So what is your favorite part of the Lurys each year? It sounds like you're relatively new in terms of experiencing it, but what has been your favorite part?
Yeah, so I must say, I had been to the Lurys many years ago. I heard you talking about Margate a while back. I've been to a Lurys
in the rainstorms.
Margate many, many years ago. In the rainstorms, exactly. So I must say, obviously being, as you mentioned earlier, having many horses in the race, there's nothing one loves more than to see
awards tables.
Our agencies doing well and seeing some of our teams. Really, I love to see the teams who actually did the work and put blood, sweat and tears with their clients actually, you know, being acknowledged. Especially if you know there's a backstory of quite challenging partnership or challenging experiences to overcome. So that for me is always inspiring, and to see our teams being rewarded for the hard work. I must say, I think that the highlight for me with the Lurys every year is really just the opportunity to engage with others in the industry and with clients who are very supportive of the industry. And there's a lovely feel usually to the Lurys around how people interact, how people network, everyone wants to engage. So I do really enjoy that. And again, the Creative Week, and especially acknowledging young creatives and bringing young creatives in, I think is a real important impact that the Lurys has. And that for me is important.
Fantastic. Any special work that stood out for you as a contender?
well. In terms of this year, I'm going to reserve the right to stay quiet about it. Otherwise, I might appear that I'm showing some favoritism for our agencies or even within our agencies, for specific agencies. But I would say that in the past, we've had some great work that still, to me, are important. I think there's work that was done by... that was for Savannah, sort of, I think it was 2021, 2022, the radio ad around the jab, sort of that sort of late COVID time around, you know, that had an impact on vaccinations. You know, we had a lot of conversation about vaccinations in South Africa. That was very important. And I think, you know, using a medium like radio, you know, that linguistic play that is so familiar for all of us and also helps you understand yourself better, but also having an important message and getting at it in that way, I think was really
true.
Something I've really thought was meaningful. And then I've always loved, and still, because of the ingenuity, because of the working within constraints, some work that was done for Boss Ice Team that won Silver Lorry in Kenya, the work done for Boss Ice Team in Kenya around Pride Month a few years ago.
Yes, I remember
really
that
working within the constraints, the legal constraints there, and working with what they have, but getting a lot of exposure and doing something quite impactful. Again, sending a message, having said something about human rights, and for me that is really... that's really impactful work. We can do those that sort of work around things that are important to communities around the continent is meaningful for me and is work that I admire.
Fantastic. Tebogo, it's been awesome chatting again. Thank you for your time and good luck to all your horses in the race.
Thank you so much, Ben, and wishing you all great conversations, and enjoy the rest of the Lurie's week.
Thanks so much.
Thanks
Take
for the
care.
Conversation.
Cheers. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Terry McKenna is Executive Creative Director at The Odd Number and is without doubt an ad man through and through. He literally oozes ideas and creativity, having forged his skills at some of South Africa's major agencies, including Grey, TVWA Hunter Scarus, Joe Public, and Ogilvy. He's won a ton of recognition in the form of local and global awards and has worked across multiple brands and industry categories. He's on the print jury this year, so we're curious as to what makes him tick creatively. So good to meet you, Terry. And I've always seen you around the Lurie's because of your unmissable hair color. And I saw a lot of it on stage last year for the work you did on Budget. What is it about South African humor that gets you excited?
Yeah, I mean, it's such an interesting one for me, you know, South African humor. I think what sets South Africans apart is, you know, no matter how difficult things become, you know, no matter what issues our countries face, and I mean, we face a lot of different issues on a daily and a yearly basis. Mm. South Africans have this way of just seeing the bright side, you know, the humorous side to things. I think we're one of the funniest, you know, countries in the world. You know, I think it's our sense of humor that allows us to get by and continue as a nation. It's like our fortitude, you know. So I love that South Africans are able to laugh at themselves and laugh at each other and not take things too seriously, even though things are pretty serious. So that's what just, you know, I feel sets us apart and gives us our own kind of special way of laughing and seeing the humor in life.
Totally get that. What it seems like there's a move from quite a dour, serious tone to the work, and that's shifting into a more optimistic, if you like, irreverent, joyful sense. Are you seeing that too?
I think we definitely seeing that. You know, I think I always see it that, you know, advertising is kind of like the ocean in a way, and you know, it's like you're seeing waves. Mm. So the work will go from being quite serious and go through a phase of kind of being quite deep and intense, and then it kind of lifts again and it becomes quite like, you know, reverence. But I mean, for me, I think our work has always kind of tended to be more irreverent, and that's kind of, for me, what South African work, a great South African work, has always been about. You know, I think back to famous work like the KFC Sad Man Meals, you know, and, you know, like I think it was for LucasAid, the work that they did there, you know, that was really irreverent and humorous. So I think there's definitely over the last, say, five, six years, there's been a strong movement in terms of doing purpose-driven work and work that's taking on all this, the social ills in the world. But at the same time, there's also work out there that's really fun and irreverent, and even taking serious issues and looking at it in an irreverent way. So I think it's still there, and hopefully it's continuing to kind of build and grow, because, you know, yes, we do need to take on the social issues in the world, but heck, we still need to have a good time and laugh as well.
100%. I think fun is purposeful.
Yeah.
You seem to stand out to me in your desire to climb deeply into our South Africanness. Where does that come from?
I kind of feel like I've always been extremely interested in culture and different cultures. And South Africa, you know the cliche now, I guess, of being the rainbow nation, if you will, is a country filled with so many different cultures. And I just don't understand if somebody wouldn't want to be interested in that and trying to tell those stories. You know, we speak 11 official different languages, and why don't we want to tell stories from all those different languages? I mean, it's a melting pot of different cultures, and I feel like we're only touching the surface of stories, beautiful South African stories that we can tell to the world. That excites me. That's what drives me as a creative.
I totally get that. So how do you become not a visitor into culture? How do you immerse yourself into culture?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but for me, you know, even when it comes to the brainstorming process, it's about being open. You know, if somebody is, you know, one of your creatives comes from a very different culture to you, instead of being afraid of that, instead of closing down to that and going, "Ooh, I don't know about this, I'm scared," I feel like you should be open. You should be like, "Really? Is that? Tell me more. I want to know more. Why is that cool in your culture? How do we use that?" So it's about being open and actually interested in other cultures as being afraid of them. I think that's a big difference for me, because I feel like a lot of people get intimidated. It's like, "Ooh, you want to do an ad in Sepedi? I don't speak Sepedi."
Yeah.
Well, what's the story? Because at the end of the day, it's still all about storytelling and bringing those stories to the surface and celebrating them. So be interested, you know.
Totally get that. Yeah. So curious.
Yeah.
So you're on the print jury this year at the Lurie's, as well as judging craft and print. What's been standing out for you?
Well, I signed an MDMA.
MDMA.
That thing. There's a lot of that going on. No, I'm joking.
I'm sure.
No, you know, the print jury is always interesting for me. I've judged it, you know, once or twice before, and I think I've got a love for print work because as a young creative, where I started out, where I learned to kind of hone skills as a creative and bring an insight and an idea onto a page that somebody needs to see it in an instant. You know, they talk about posterized ideas. You know, it's like you see an image and a line, and it's like, bang, you need to get that idea. You need to tell a story really quickly. So I always feel like, you know, getting in the beginning of your career, if you learn how to do print really well, it helps you in all your other mediums.
Because of the brevity and the conciseness, or the
brevity, the conciseness, the discipline of learning to do that. I think print work looks a lot easier than it is.
Mm.
It's actually really hard to do a great piece of print work. And, you know, I've been hearing for a long time about print is dying, but, you know, I still think it's there, and there's a place for it, and it's nice to see a healthy amount of work entered this year that's quality work. And I think when it comes to print, you know, you can visually see how much love people have put into a piece. So it's always nice to be involved in that category.
Fantastic. So the next thing, I mean, it's quite a polarizing question, I guess.
Sure.
ChatGPT, dot, dot, dot. Dabble, dive in, or don't touch?
You know, I think, you know, we might get into it in terms of trends in the lorries and, you know, for this year, etc. But look, I think AI is here. It's most definitely here. And it's you're seeing it all over the place being used in different ways. I didn't get to see that I'm aware of ChatGPT in that sense. I'm sure it's being used. In the print category, for instance, you're starting to have a debate in terms of, say, a craft category where people are going, is that traditional photography? Can we award it for photography? Because they probably used Midjourney. But then there's other guys going, yes, but Midjourney went through a gazillion photos to create a new image. Mm. So what is it?
Jeez, it's like chicken and egg again.
It is. But for me, the way I like to see, your ChatGPT and your Midjourneys and all of the AIs, I feel like as an industry for Africa and the Middle East, if we don't embrace it, we're going to get left behind. The way I see it is it's another tool. Mm. And, when people went from just illustrating on paper to using computers, there was a big hoo-ha about that. So now we've got AI. So you can be terrified by it or you can embrace it. And I feel my opinion is as a community, creatively, we need to find ways to embrace it and make our work better. Because if we don't, when it comes to, sort of being current and sticking with the level of the international sort of counterparts, we will get left behind very quickly.
Gotcha. So the next one is really about the immersing yourself into the work. How do you know that you're overcrafting something? Is there like an alarm that goes off? Does your computer shut down? what happens?
Sure, that's a really hard one. I tend to feel as creative people, I'm never 100% sure if I've completely done it. If it's at its very, very best. And I always have that urge to want to go maybe that little something. But I find that like a good gauge maybe is to share it with your clients, to share it with other people. And I feel like you'll get to a certain point of tinkering where other people, because you get so involved in the piece of work, it like sucks you in. And it's nice to then show to other people and they'll go along the journey. And at some point they'll go, nah, Terry, like you've maybe gone too far. It's not so funny anymore. Or it's like, it's overcooked. It's lost a bit of its charm. You need to take it back. So I think by sharing your work with other people, you'll get a sense of, okay, maybe I need to leave it as it is now. But it's saying that sometimes we'll work on a piece of work and years later I'll listen to it again and I'm like, man, we should have changed that line.
Should have stretched it.
Should have changed that line, or we should have changed that visual. So it's a process, yeah?
Yeah. Cool. Got it. So sticking to the theme of South African work, what is the piece of work that you've seen that you haven't been involved with that holds the most jealousy for you?
It's a tough one for me to answer that because, I'd love to have been able to see all the work, and I haven't, to be honest. I haven't seen all the work yet because I think every year Lurie's becomes bigger and bigger and bigger, and it takes me like a good month after the Lurie, well, during,
to plow
during
through
the Lurie's to during the Lurie's to after the Lurie's to go through, everything. But I love film, as many creatives do, I love the art of filmmaking, and I love some of the budgets that the guys have when it comes to the work that's been done for some of the film pieces. I've been seeing there's some lovely pieces again this year for the chicken brands. Mm. I don't know what it is about South Africa and making great commercials for chicken, but there's a beautiful piece of film for Chicken Licken that I think is going to do really well. I think it's called Make Your Family Proud. And then there's another piece of film for KFC, which is, I think it's called...
The Marion Island one.
Yeah, it's the Marion Island one. I think it's directed by Kim Peldenice. That's also beautiful. And what I'm seeing there is, you know, it's not like 30-second TV commercials. It's like two-minute film. And that's something that excites me because I go, geez, the guys are actually starting to make... little movies that are, you know, just beautiful.
It's
beautiful to watch. And that makes me envious. I'd like to get into that and make more of that for our clients.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but that's the healthy thing that I feel the Lurie's brings out. It's a healthy competition which raises the levels.
Definitely, yeah.
So if you look to the future and the whole bunch of young Terries out there, varsity or college or... wherever they might be finding themselves, what words of wisdom would you want to give them?
Become an accountant.
Way more exciting.
Well, you'll probably be more financially secure. I would say, you know, follow your passion. I think to be in advertising and to succeed in advertising as a creative, you need to really be passionate about what you do. It's a tough industry. The hours are intense, you know. It's hard to sort of continuously being judged, you know, because it's like every day you're going in there trying to come up with something and the guys are like, no, keep pushing. So for me, it's like always be passionate and never give in, you know, just believe in yourself. But I guess most importantly, you know, have a thick skin. Just keep pushing, because that's really important in our industry. You know, if you want to succeed, I don't think people... it's very rare that someone comes into our industry and in the first year they're just going to sweep everything and clean everything up. You know, you've got to learn and grow, and to do that you need to have a thick skin. You've got to continue to be passionate in what you do, love what you do, and if you have that, you're going to succeed.
How do you counter that enormous amount of effort, grit, drive, determination? What do you do for yourself outside of work to counterbalance the investment in work?
What do you mean? I just work.
It is mental health day today. Well,
oh, wow, it is, really. Mental health day. You know, for me, like I mentioned earlier, I love film. You know, so I watch a lot of film. I love going through all the old, you know, like I'll pick a director. You know, like I'll go like Ridley Scott, and this month I'm just going to watch all Ridley Scott's films, or Oliver Stone, I'm just going to watch all of his films, you know. And for me, I find inspiration in that. You know, it's like, oh wow, look at the techniques that we're using, or, you know, look how they brought that story to life. So that's kind of like my space, where it's like I'm relaxing, but it's actually inspiring me. But at the same time, music, fashion, it's just like continuously feeding myself things that are in a broader creative industry, you know. So what, you know, what music is cool right now, you know, what fashion is in, what are the cool series that are out there. It's just kind of constantly trying to feed myself things that are inspiring. You know, it's not necessarily advertising, but it's cool things, and I can relax while doing that. But I believe even subconsciously it's inspiring me to do what I do as a living, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. So going all the way back to the beginning, you're up and down on stage a lot for the budget work last year. What is the work that you're excited about out of the Odd Number for this year that you're holding thumbs
for? Yeah, so, I mean, traditionally we've always been really strong in radio, the radio category. I mean, the budget work that we did last year was obviously for radio. And over the years, we've done a bunch of work in the radio category that's fortunately been very well received. And I think this year, you know, touch wood, is this table made of wood?
It's melamine.
Melamine. Doesn't that count? Damn. touch my head.
Yeah.
I think this year we, you know, it's lovely again that I think we're well represented in the radio category, both in the non-English category and then in the English kind of main English category. So we got a lovely piece of work. We actually got three pieces of work from game stores.
Yes.
In the radio category, we got one in the non-English category called Rock Bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically about, you know, there's that duality about you've got rock bottom prices. It's as low as it can get, but how that affects a product. So how does a product feel about hitting rock bottom in terms of prices? So the product's feeling pretty depressed. It's like, what's wrong with me? I need a shrink. You know, talking about mental health. Yeah. Well, the mental health of a product when it hits rock bottom.
Discount me too much.
Yeah, I'm still great. Right? So why am I priced so low? So that's a lovely campaign in the non-English category. And it's in Sepedi, the whole campaign. And then we've also got a lovely radio spot for Youth Father's Day for GAIN. So we realized this year that Youth Day and Father's Day fall on the same day.
No way.
Yeah. So we did this campaign about, you know, basically men are you know, we're still young. Yeah. We still act like children a lot of the time, especially according to our wives. But then also sometimes we need to be grown up. And it's the ad is basically all about, you know, what to get someone on Youth Father's Day, because part of them is a youth, part of them is a father, you know. So GAIN's got everything that you would want for him. And then the last one for GAIN is for GAIN Assembly, which is a lovely, beautifully written spot about how if you're trying to assemble something yourself, you know, it can become quite a harrowing thing, you know, it can drive you insane. So rather let the professionals do it. And then the last campaign that we got in is actually for Salvation Army. And over the years, we've done a lot of work for the Salvation Army.
The print one. With all the tight...
well, this
the
one...
The tight clothing.
Yeah. So that was a campaign we did a few years ago. It was really, really well-received and well-received internationally, which was great. So we've actually had a long relationship with the Salvation Army. And... you know, every year one of the drives that they have is for clothing, especially over winter. You know, it gets really cold in certain parts of the country and there's a lot of homeless people that don't have adequate clothing. So every winter we do a clothes drive, and this year we did a radio campaign basically about... it's a humorous look at something that's actually quite serious in a sense, is that... You know, when a loved one passes away, it's all their clothes. You're left with all of their clothes, which reminds you of them quite a bit.
Sure.
And the thing that happens if you don't donate, you know, if you don't donate those clothes to the Salvation Army, they're going to end up in the hands of family members that aren't going to treat those clothes with the respect they deserve. So your father's graduation gown is going to end up at a club downtown. you know, dancing for ballers. So you know, rather keep the dignified memory of your family members intact and donate the clothes to the Salvation Army. So
that's awesome.
It's a really fun campaign. So, and the guys put a lot of love into that. So fingers crossed they do well. But also shout out just to, you know, just a plug for our clients at GAIN. I mean, we've got three campaigns just in the radio category for them. And, you know, a lot of time people would go GAIN, game stores, you know, that's retail. But, you know, Catherine Madley, head of marketing there, and then, you know, right-hand lady, you know, Michelle Kemp. I'm just truly amazed at how over the years they've allowed us so much freedom to make great work on what somebody would traditionally go, oh, but that's just products and price. So we've had a great partnership with them, and I'd just like to thank them for believing us and allowing us to make great work, because as it's such a cliche, but it's such a truth. You can't make great work without great clients, you know.
Sounds like you guys have earned that freedom. Well done, Terry.
Thanks so much for the chat.
It's been awesome meeting you and just getting to know you a little bit more. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Such a pleasure. Good luck.
Thank you.
Last up is Carl Willoughby, Chief Creative Officer at TBWA Huntler Scarlers, and also chairperson of the Creative Circle. He is a highly experienced and awarded creative, having worked across different industries and disciplines for over 20 years. He truly believes in the power that advertising has to shift society, and is one of those people that loves to get in the trenches with the work. This year at the Lurie's, Carl is judging the film and film crafts categories. Welcome, Carl Willoughby.
Cool.
Lucky to have you here.
Thank you.
So,
let's get into the work. So last year, you really showed us that, firstly, you guys aren't scared of AI. Mm. The Ricky Rick Foundation work was really impressive, like truly remarkable. Do you think the basis going forward for AI as a creative tool is there?
I think so. I mean, it was a thing with the Ricky Rick thing. You know, there's something about AI where it allows you to do certain things that previously wasn't possible. You know, if we didn't have AI, we would have had to get a sound alike. It would have compromised the authenticity of the piece and the campaign.
Yes.
The one thing that we stressed and even tried to make sure that came across in the case study was that AI was a tool. AI wasn't the idea. You know, so for me, AI allowed us to keep a legacy alive. But the idea wasn't that. The idea was using his tweet to build a message of hope for those suffering with mental health issues. And I think we were actually chatting about that today. I guess this whole week, everyone's been speaking about AI blurries, right? But I think AI is a way for us to supercharge things. You know, we were discussing that today, actually, at lunch, where, you know, if you consider, we said 30 years ago, it might be longer, where people created layouts by hand, and a layout might take 2 weeks to do. That's not the case, you know, with the advent of computer, Photoshop, the various digital applications. In a similar way, AI is going to do a similar thing. I think for me, and I'm not the biggest tech person, I'm more of a generalist, but I think AI should help liberate creatives to focus on the ideas that set them apart or the campaigns apart. I think if we think that AI is an idea, it's not. It's a tool, like Photoshop was, right?
100%. I mean, I heard a quote the other day from Antonio Petro, one of our strategists, and he said, AI is a forklift for the brain, which I thought was quite interesting. So I see the commonality of the way that you've described it. It's purely just a tool.
I mean, I think it's a way to analyze data. There's generative AI. There's AI that can learn, AI that can help supercharge things, speed things up.
Transactional AI.
AI. I think you know, we saw Elon Musk in Cannes. He did a talk about AI, and he said in the next year we'll feel the impact of AI in our lives and our work. In the next 3 years, we'll feel a fundamental impact on our day-to-day.
Wow.
You know, that's not going away. We've just got to figure out how we're going to use it. How we're going to, you know, I use AI for presentations. I'm not a copywriter, so I write what I need to, and I use AI to help me clean that up and make me sound like I know what I'm talking about. You know, I help build presentations using AI for myself. You know, so it's a tool that we have to harness, whether we like it or not.
Awesome. So something that really defined a lot of the work in previous years was being purposeful, purpose-led. Certainly we used it in the agency where I'm from. Has that notion of purpose gone away, or have we built on top of it?
I mean, you'll see it with, it's a little bit in the old days, I guess people used to use crass insights, topics that are, you know, they're kind of going for the gut with certain things.
Unnecessary edge.
And I think purpose gave the communication industry a sense of meaning, right? Like using communication to do something good, meaningful, powerful. I think what's happening is that, and there are a couple of things. I think coming out of COVID, there was a lot of like serious sort of messaging. People all like very meaningful and philosophical. And I think there's a thing. I'm not speaking about the work at Lurie's. I think there's just a general thing around a lightness. Right, that wants to, people want to be entertained, people want to feel something. Yes, that, and I guess people are also like, you know, if it's going to be meaningful and purposeful, I think what maybe we in the industry are looking for is whether that work has impact. It's very easy to go crass and shock value, but how is your work kind of having some sort of impact? And impact we can say is financial, societal, cultural, legal. I think purpose work needs to show some sort of impact. I think as one thing, but I do think there's a kind of move towards humor. There's a move towards lightness. We saw that Cannes this year. I think in some of the work that we judged, there's humor in the work, and it was good and light and just made you feel something again. And I think we're so serious.
Yeah.
We tend to be. I mean, I think the Ricky Rick thing was a serious thing, but it had meaning and it had an intention about, him, his legacy, and how he was constantly uplifting others around him, right? So it made sense. But we tried to create as much impact as we could with that, and as much awareness as we could with that, and it did. But there is a move towards a lightness. I think the world wants it, right?
Totally. So much,
there's war, there's like economic
global
pressures,
warming.
AI. You know, people want a bit of lightness.
Definitely. I mean, we spoke to Terry McKenna earlier, and I mean, there's definitely levity in the work that he's been working on, and joy and a sense of exuberance, because I think people have been pretty flat for quite some time, even in South Africa. I mean, the optics haven't been great. But I recently watched an interview with you around strategic arguments and linking it to creative distinction, as well as pushing impact. How do you blend those three without it just being homogenized?
Yeah, I think if I'm understanding your question correctly, I think, and the interview or the talk was, creativity without impact is art. I believe the work we do has the ability to make a difference, create sales, create awareness, make a difference, right? If we're just doing stuff that just shines a light on something, that's okay. But if it's not creating any sort of impact or driving you to do anything, then there is a problem with that. I know that sounds weird. I mean, come from a brand space, brand point of view. So from a brand, telling you what a brand does is cool, and creating brand awareness, and hopefully there's some sort of action that comes off of that. We've seen how just brand awareness can drive sales. We did a campaign last year for like a big summer campaign for MTN, and we didn't have a call to action. We didn't have a sort of download this and then get this and get airtime, and it helped. It helped them. It was a successful summer for them through brand, right? But and brand can serve that purpose. But I think if we're just doing ads that are just cool without some sort of intention or impact behind it, then I think we'd probably just try to create art.
Yeah.
You'll see how Cannes bought Effie's.
Yes.
And I think that's a bit of a statement for me, right? And even from a creative circle point of view, we're kind of engaging with Effie's a little bit more to see how we can help them from their accreditation. But I think the need to do work that works is a basic thing within our industry. And I think there are a lot of themes and fashionable things that kind of come up and shift all of that. But that's what we are paid to do, is to sell product.
You can't get excited about creating impact. Yeah. That's why you're hired. So coming back to the Lurie's, the film category has always felt like the pinnacle.
Mm-hmm.
What do you enjoy about judging film entries?
Firstly, there was a lot of work this year, but I just enjoy being transported somewhere. I'm a visual guy. Mm. You know, my background is visual. I will consume visual stuff. Mm. You know, I wish I read more, to be honest. But I think with film, for us, it's just simple stories. It's like I don't need a case study necessarily to understand it. I can just be told a story. And it's about how well that story has been told. Mm. It's about how innovative it is in terms of the way it's put together, the way it's shot, the way it's telling that story. I love just seeing how, and we had a lot of, I mean, we had 2 days. We had the film categories, conceptual, day one on Monday, and then Tuesday we judged all the film crafts. I loved the film craft. We ended up going up until like 11:15 on Tuesday night. It was a bit of a late one, but we had good discussions around the world. You know, I think for me, it's like understanding, and we're in a world where it's not just the traditional story, right? Film is traditional in many ways, but for me, it's just going back to that simple principle with all the various elements, like from cinematography through to script writing, through to directing, you know, it's all those elements coming together to just make me feel something.
Music, performance,
everything. Yeah. I really enjoyed that, especially on Tuesday.
Amazing.
I think, yeah, film is just purist. It's like print, pure. Pure, sort of conceptual, and the integration of all the craft, all the skills that come together to kind of create that message.
Fantastic. Did you notice any nuances coming out or anything more deliberate in terms of trends?
I mean, I think, I guess I've said this before in the past, I think, so it's interesting, there's a body of work from South Africa, there's a body of work from the Middle East, right? Middle East has lots of budgets, big budgets. Some of it feels like a movie, like a movie that you're watching. And it's hard because we were speaking about like money that's allocated to a production, but at the end of the day, it's still the idea that, you know, you can't ignore craft, but we can assess things on how strong the idea is, right? And I think themes, I would say humor.
All right.
I think we tend to be better at, it's going to sound probably like a criticism, I think we, you know, when we were on day one, we finished at 8, okay, just to give you a sense of things. Not late.
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently another panel finished at 2 or 3 in the morning. We finished at 8. Conceptually, it felt like we were going through quite a lot of stuff. But then when we got into craft, the volume felt more. We thought we'd be quick on Tuesday, but we ended up going on till much later that evening because we are very good at craft. Right? We're good at, we've got great cinematography. Our music's really good. All that stuff's good, but I think, if I can say I don't know if we have the volume of film. We've got a lot of film, but in terms of standout film, I don't know if we have that volume of standout film. But the body of work that we did see collectively, the ones that stood out are well crafted.
Fantastic.
I think there is humor in the mix. I think that's all I can say. It's otherwise Pritesh will probably fire me.
Is there an art to selling in brave or risky work? Is there a specific approach you follow, or take the client to the bar first?
Yeah, I think we probably need to get it, but we need to get back to that. Yeah. I think we need to have a little bit of the razzmatazz. I think the agency industry, advertising industry, has lost a little bit of that
luster.
Yeah, I think we have become a little bit. Now, I'm not speaking of our agency. I think we only, you know, I think we can do more as an industry with that. We had a panel discussion this morning. We were speaking about this thing around trust and relationships between agency and clients, agency and brands, and how do we build trust, the agency brand relationship that's longer. There's a correlation that where the work coming out of that relationship tends to be better because of trust, right? So and that makes sense, you would think. If we do anything for our clients' brands, we try and make sure that any work that we do is aligned, if it's not briefed in, is aligned to what keeps them up at night.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, in the old days, people would, what if we did this? And, you know, it would be amazing. And the client would say, yeah, but that's got nothing to do with my business. I think, you know, there was a thing that came out of Scopin, I don't know if you know the Scopin report, and there was a section where marketers were asked about the value that agencies add to their business, right? And that was quite a bit of a like obvious signal for me, because I was like, oh yeah, we're not just transactional service providers. We should be paid to think about our clients' brands and driving sales and making their brands better, making their brands show up. You know, no marketer is going to say no to that. I think for us, when we can solve clients' problems, be it briefed in or not briefed in, that's what works, right? And I mean, there's a lot of discussion around this, I think, and it gets very subjective, you know, but we try and make sure that we do work that works. I call it the slam dunk, or the work is bulletproof. You can't argue that work. You can't argue that case study. We try and do work that works that way.
It sounds awesome. So,
I think the final question is really around leadership and showing up with confidence, and how do you get the best out of your creative teams? Like, what do you do to show up as a leader every day? Because it's a grind.
Yeah, it is a grind. And like at the conference, I said, I wish I had a silver bullet. Mm. I wish I knew the answer to that. I don't. Mm. You know, I think one thing I do, like from my point of view, from my personal point of view, is I try and make sure that I'm consistent, that people know where they stand with me. I think if people feel that I'm hot or cold, that's a problem. And I can be hot or cold because I might have a bad day. I'm human, right? But I think for me, I try and be, I don't play games with people. We joke, we have lightness, it's we human, we interact, we engage and all that. But I'd like to know that everyone knows that our objective, and I'm saying this from Huntless Cars, our objective is to do great work, work that sets us apart, iconic work in our words. And if people don't know that, then I don't know what they're doing at the agency. If they don't understand that that's what we do, it's very clear for me, the work...
That's your true north.
That is our true north, right? And we've got specific goals. I've got specific goals personally. But as an agency, the work we do is our showroom. Our showroom creates our credentials. Our credentials creates PR, wins awards, and wins new business. It's not any more complicated than that. And I think when we blur that with other issues, there's a problem. Everything else is in service of the work, to be honest. Culture, the people, facilities, environment, the kind of tools and technology that you use, it's all in service of the work.
Fantastic.
And if you're not doing that, then I don't know. It's maybe you're doing something right in other ways, but it's, for us, it's not the kind of space that I'd want to be in. I want to work in a place where we can just do good work.
Got it. Makes sense. What are, as a wrap, what are the pieces that you optimistic and holding thumbs for from TBWA this year?
From TBWA, it's a, you know, like if I consider where we were last year, this time we were very hopeful with Ricky Rick.
Yeah.
It was something new. We were nervous because it's AI fatigue, all that kind of stuff. But I think the purpose and the meaning, and the purpose of it gave it meaning and helped elevate it, I think. And I think it was well packaged. I'm not trying to, you know, go to our own boat with that. But this year, we've got a spread of work across all our clients. We've got work for, we've got work for Hi-Fi Corporation. We've got work for City Lodge, McDonald's, Vintook. I think City Lodge is what we're very hopeful for. We've got two campaigns.
Also irreverent and light.
Yeah, yeah. It's light. I mean, Bedtime Stories was an idea that's been in the mix for quite a while. Full team behind that. We had a writer's room basically working on it. We had 9 episodes that we wrote. We used a little bit of tech to come bring it alive. And so I'm excited about City Lodge. Also, our client, City Lodge, is judging this year, Zookly. So quite, and I think it's her first year being here. So I think... I'm excited about, you know, there's something Pritesh said. I'm excited about a marketer's understanding what all of this is, right? I know that's not the question, but I think for City Lodge, I hope it does well.
Well, it's a virtuous cycle.
Yeah.
You know, the more they judge, the more they buy in, the more work the industry ends up getting.
So for Zuki and for City Lodge, I hope Bedtime Stories and Reusable Ads does stuff. But fingers crossed for all the work. We've got our design team here. We've got the various teams involved in the various campaigns. So I think just being here, if we win, great. If we don't, then it'll spur us on to do better work next year.
Carl, cool. It's been great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ben.
Lovely
Thank
chatting.
You.
Thank you. And
Thank
good
you.
Luck.
Thank you.